Welcome back to another episode of Better Than I Found It, the podcast all things college golf. You're listening to Mike McGraw, the men's golf coach at Baylor University. Today's guest is Gavin Hall, a former All-American at the University of Texas and current professional golfer. Gavin is an ultra-talented, uber-talented young player who has suffered from injuries throughout his career. As he talks us through those injuries and through his college golf years, we'll also see how he's come out on the other side, probably a better player and a better man, and he is healthy today, and so we get to talk about that as well. Gavin's a great guy, and I think you'll really enjoy this interview. Okay, Better Than I Found It listeners, let's give a big welcome to former University of Texas All-American Gavin Hall. Gavin, thanks for making the time to be with me here today.
Yeah, no, Coach, no problem. It's great to chat with you, and I'm excited to do this.
Well, you are in Knoxville, Tennessee, I think, getting ready to do a Monday qualifier for the Corn Ferry event there. Tell me about that golf course. Like, I know you're going to – we're going to talk about your journey here in a minute, but tell me about what you're getting ready to do on Monday.
Yeah, I'm excited to do another Monday qualifier for the Corn Ferry Tour. I've been chasing those mostly this season and then countering them with like mini tour events, 3-day events and state opens and such like that. This course on Monday is Three Ridges Golf Course. It's a four spotter and I'm looking forward to playing well. I'm sure the number will be around 6, 7, or 8. That's kind of normal when you go to these Mondays. But playing pretty good. I just came off of the St. Louis Metropolitan Open and had a nice week there. So just feel good about my game. And I'm excited to, I got two more chances in the Mondays. And then I'm not going to continue them. I'm going to play the Canadian Tour season.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, that's getting ready to get fired up. But, you know, Some people don't really understand the Monday mentality. I mean, it's a crazy thing because if you make an early bogey, you kind of have to figure out, you know, what am I going to do here? But what is your mentality? What do you take in that? Because I know that a lot of young players end up chasing Mondays. And what's the best way to handle that?
The best way is just, you know, number one is be good to yourself because there's a lot of failures and you got to learn to deal with that. And then, like you said, if you get off to a rough start, you really got to, you know, battle back and make, you know, birdies on the back nine or get to that number of what we talked about, probably 6, 7, or 8 under. And the line is so fine now. Everyone is pretty good. Everyone's going to shoot a number, regardless of whether there's going to be 4, 5, or 6 guys that are going to have a solid day. So the mentality is foot on the gas pedal. And I don't know enough about the Corn Ferry Tour, but from what I've heard and playing the Canadian Tour last season, your foot needs to be on the gas 1 through 4. And that's just how good golf is getting. That's how, you know, a testament to the players, because everyone's doing similar stuff and everyone is doing the right things.
Absolutely. You know, a former player of mine from here at Baylor, Cooper Dossi, just Mondayed in this past week, and that's the second time he's done it this year. He understands it's real too, but Cooper has that crazy ability. He's shot some really low numbers, really low. So he understands putting the foot on the gas pedal, and I think every player has to do it. But one other question about that, because in team golf, when you're playing college golf, you always want a kid to stay in the game. Don't ever think your score doesn't count. It always counts. So if you are 1 over par through 7 holes and you know it's going to take 6 under that day, what's the mentality to not mail it in or tank it at that point? How do you do that? How do you fight that?
You know, I just have always grown up trying to get something out of the round. And, you know, professional golf is, you know, you have, you know, people supporting you. You have, you know, people, family members, such like that. So I don't know. I just kind of take pride in my work, and I treat it what I have been doing the last few years is just kind of treating it more like work. You know, regardless of what I shoot, I'm going to go out there and get something out of it and get the best, you know, that I can. I don't I don't want to be getting in habits of no carding or doing things like that. I just want to be able to go out there and shoot around. And fortunately, when I do tee it up, I am under par, and it's not like it's a sloppy day. So I do feel like I have somewhat of a chance. Sometimes I probably get a little bit in my head if it's, if I think the score is going to be lower than what I think it is. Sometimes it's a little different. You never know, but you know, the best thing I've learned is just staying in my own lane. Again, you can't control or block the other kid's shot or do what they're doing. You know, at the end of the day, you know, 1 through 18, just try to do the best you can.
Good advice. Good advice. I hope my guys are listening to that right now. But, you know, we got a lot more to talk about, certainly in your professional career. Before we do that, let's talk. They're playing a really big golf tournament this week on a golf course that's very near and dear to you, Oak Hill, Donald Ross Design. Talk about it. 36 hole leader, co-leader is also a good friend of yours, Scotty Scheffler. So it's like there's a lot going on there in Rochester, New York this week.
Totally. And they just redid the course. It looks beautiful. The weather's not too conducive to the scoring, so that adds a little bit to the mix. But shocker, of course, Scottie Scheffler is in the mix again. He's playing good golf, and it's impressive to see his formula. He doesn't change his camp. It seems like he doesn't change his style of preparation, and he keeps things extremely simple. So that's nice to see, but it's a great golf course. It's a good golf town. Lucky that I grew up in that area with a bunch of really good players to push me to get better. There's about 5 or 6 Donald Ross golf courses. And then Oak Hill is just got a knack for great major championship golf. You know, it's a nice setting. And that stretch coming down 16, 17, 18 is going to be fun to watch. But no, a lot of guys that I know are playing, and it's cool to see, you know, their thoughts on the place. And it's demanding golf for sure. It's not the normal, you know, birdie fest. It's more of a U.S. Open or just a really hard major championship, and similar, I guess, to what Bethpage was in 19.
Yeah, I would say Oak Hill has an amazing history of major championship golf. One, you remember when I think you were probably 9 or 10, the 2003 PGA Championship when Sean McKeel hit that shot on the last hole. Do you have memories of that week watching as a little kid? And did that inspire you?
I do. Yeah, that was a big week for me because I wasn't too big into golf at that time. I was playing a lot of other sports and getting a few letters from you, I guess, later on after that. But no, I loved going to that tournament. It got me in the that's when Tiger Woods was really going in, you know, 03. He was on his run, and you know, he was golf at the time, and Mike Weir was a good player. He was left-handed. That stood out with me. And then Phil as well. There weren't too many lefties out there, so I was always paying attention to Weir and Mickelson. But that got me totally into the game. You know, it was a lot of fun. And then 2013 was, you know, I was much more familiar with the game. I was playing good. And, you know, that was a fun week to see Jason Duffner and Jim Furyk coming down the stretch. And again, kept it under 10 under par. And that was just a testament of how good that golf course is.
Well, I have similar memories of Southern Hills in Tulsa. I grew up about an hour and a half away. And I'll never forget the 1970 PGA at Southern Hills when Dave Stockton won and Arnold Palmer was runner up. And I have this visual memory of standing behind one green in the first round, and Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer were coming down, and a throng of about 10,000 fans were following him. And I just thought, what is this? You know, I was only 10, but I do have great memories of that. And caddied in the U.S. Open there at Southern Hills when I was 17. So have a good memory. I'm sure you have similar memories from Oak Hill. So that's great. Okay, so early influences in junior golf. You talked about how that week kind of affected you a little bit, but your parents, Bob and Mary Ellen, great, great parents. I mean, I really enjoyed getting to know them during the recruiting process, but your dad was a firefighter. Not very many firefighters have a junior golf All-American in their household. How did that all come about? And did he have an influence on your game?
He never pushed me. He was more into just supporting me as a son and making sure, you know, I was going to all my sports. I wasn't big into golf until about I was, you know, 11 years old. I was more into baseball, soccer, and basketball. But, you know, my parents were awesome. They didn't know much about golf, which maybe, you know, benefited me. I didn't get extra pressure. I was just always positive support, regardless if I go out and shoot 85 or 65, it didn't matter. But I turned the corner when I was 11 years old. I had a foot injury, so I couldn't play other sports for that summer. And yeah, you know, I was able to go to the golf course. My parents joined a local course, Mendon Country Club at the time. And it was 10 minutes from my house. And that was like, you know, they would drop me off on their way to work. And then that was my home away from home. Similar to, you know, how a lot of these guys in the States get involved into golf. You know, it's kind of like the golf course is their daycare at a young age, you know, and then you just, you know, you tend to love the game, and it's a beautiful thing. You don't need too many teammates. You don't, you know, it's kind of all on you, which is total responsibility at a young age, you know, for your game. And I had good people that pushed me, especially that were a little bit older, and I just got hooked. But yeah, totally different, especially my dad's work schedule. He's working 3 days of the night, and then he's got 3 days off and working the day shift. So he did have some time off to watch me play and do that sort of thing. And then my mom was grinding away her Meerschaum management company. And but no, I just had a normal kind of child upbringing, and just enjoyed golf. And again, didn't get that push like I needed to do it. You know, it was always like I wanted to do it. And and then played, you know, similar like district, you know, district stuff, and then the States, and then work your way into the AJGAs.
That's great. Well, you know, your career obviously developed in golf. It's great to know that your parents didn't push you. My dad did not. He was a club professional at a country club and did not push me. He let me come to the game as I saw fit, and I enjoyed it. And I'm still in it today, probably because of that. But basketball. So you were a really, really good basketball player. Were you left-handed in basketball as well?
I was not. I was right-handed.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That's interesting. But yeah. I considered it an absolute huge positive that you were a basketball player that everybody in the country was recruiting. But a lot would people would disagree with me. It's like, no, he needs to focus on the golf. If he wants to be a great player, you know, he's got to do that. Well, I think multi-sport athletes are become better golfers personally. Why was it a benefit for you? And would you agree with what I just said?
I agree, because I didn't know any better having the winter. So I grew up in upstate New York in Rochester. And, you know, that's 6 months of pretty good winter weather. You know, you can't be outside. You need to take a break from golf. And I felt like that was a good thing for me, because these AJGA tournaments now, they are legitimate golf tournaments. You know, it is a mental and physical taxing week. You know, it's, you know, I definitely feel like if I was doing that, you know, and playing golf tournaments year round, or really just chasing golf like that, I probably would have gotten burned out. But knowing I had 6 and 6, I could give everything I had for those 6 months of golf. And then, you know, as soon as, you know, after the Ping Invitational in October, I never played like, you know, the polo tournament in Thanksgiving. But as soon as that came around, I knew, you know, I was going to be with my teammates, and that was a different atmosphere. You know, golf is very individual. It's all on you. You do have your friends in junior golf, but at the same time, when you tee it up, you know, it's you versus the course. But basketball was a little different. I had my guys, and I just enjoyed being around a crew like that. And it's definitely a different type of sport. And I love playing it. I played it all throughout my sophomore year in high school, and then junior and senior year, I didn't play it. Mostly just had a few injuries, and I just decided just to focus on golf until I got to college.
So you'd already been developing as a player, and but the first time I got to see you on a national level was the Rolex Tournament of Champions in, I think it was Dalhousie, it was in Missouri.
You have a great and, number.
Well, I was there recruiting. I wasn't there recruiting you. I was yeah. there recruiting Taylor Gooch, and Taylor led after 36 holes. And,
yeah,
you know, I knew Taylor was a player I needed on my team, but I saw you play that week, and you finished second. You had a great week.
I did, yeah.
And but had you played on that biggest stage before, or had most of it been up in the Northeast?
No, my first, you know, that year, my first invitational on the AJGA circuit, I knew I was like, okay, I've made it at the elite level playing in those invitationals, because they're a big deal. And especially when you're young like that, all you want to do is work up your status and play in those type of events. So my first one was that FootJoy in June, and I played in that, and that was at Sedgefield Country Club. I didn't play great. I finished in the top 25. And then I believe the next event after that was the Rolex. And my junior career went up pretty quickly. It escalated quick. You know, there was a lot of success. And, you know, I remember competing and being down the stretch playing with Ben On and TJ Vogel in the playoff, you know, at Dalhousie. And the nice thing about me is I kept my blinders on. I had good coaching. I had Joe Lissardi was a nice local coach who was helping me throughout my junior career, because that was, you know, different stuff to be able to, you know, okay, can you do it in the district level? Can you do it on the state level? And then, okay, now you're on the, you know, invitational circuit. Can you compete against these top level guys? And, you know, luckily I was able to get in the mix and learn early. And then from there, I played in the Cannon Cup at the time, the East and West. But I just enjoyed playing. I didn't realize some of the things I was doing at a young age was different, but I just really enjoyed competing and being able to play. And no summer jobs, no nothing. That was really it. I was able to go chase and play golf.
Well, like a college golfer, your job is golf. I mean, in school, I mean, that's your job. So you played a high level junior golf for a few years there for sure. And you were selected all, not just the Cannon Cup, but also the Junior Ryder Cup in Chicago in 2012. And that was a pretty good team. You had, as teammates, you had Cameron Champ, Bo Hosler, Jim Liu, Scotty Scheffler, and Robbie Shelton. I mean, wow. There's some U.S. junior champions, a junior PGA champion, future tour winners, major champions. I mean, what a team. Talk about that week in Chicago.
It was awesome. What a week at, you know, Olympia Fields there. And, you know, it was what you would expect. You know, that's kind of one that you circle on the calendar. I think they now have a President's Cup for the juniors as well. So those two events, I'm sure, as a team event, it's so unique and different than the invitationals, the U.S. junior, or, you know, you're playing well enough for the U.S. amateur and stuff like that. So having teammates like that are that good, you know, it was a lot of fun to play good golf like that beside each other. And then the women aspect was cool as well. So having both boys and girls on the team and going against, you know, elite level competition. I remember playing Matthias Schwab in a match, and then, you know, there he is on the PGA Tour now. So a lot of guys, it's fun to see them work up the ranks like that. And, you know, guys are getting good early.
They are, absolutely. And that experience obviously led you to eventually getting to the University of Texas. You took a little pit stop there at UCLA for a semester, but your career at Texas was really good. You were a two-time All-American. I think I looked up and you had 21 top 10s, two victories, and All-American twice. So you obviously, and you played on some great teams. I mean, your teammates, it doesn't go on that I can count four PGA Tour players currently, and I may have missed, but I think Doug Gim, Scotty Scheffler, Bo Hosler, and Kramer Hickok. Any other guy I missed? Did I miss anyone?
No, those four.
Okay, great. Well, a lot happened. Well, first of all, just tell me this. How important are teammates in college? Because I always encourage freshmen to look up to the senior upperclassmen, different players. How important are teammates in learning? Because everybody thinks, okay, you only learn from your coach, but that's not even close to being true.
No, not true. But first off, you know, having that early success in the junior, you know, world, I was able to have opportunities to go to significant colleges, and being like a kid from Rochester, New York, and my parents not playing, it was challenging. You know, my parents did the best they could to realize what choices I had. And again, it was, you know, I didn't know exactly what I was doing, you know, in choosing UCLA as soon as I went out there. You know, it was almost like too many options at the time. You know, it was a bit overwhelming for me. So in that aspect, I was able to go to UCLA, experience it over there on the West Coast. It wasn't for me. Luckily, I was able to coordinate with the coach and move on and be able to, you know, move on at Texas with great players there. And I knew that my game was going to improve if I was going to be around that caliber of players. Because at the time, Bo Hoster was playing incredible golf, and they're coming off a national championship in 2012. So I knew systems were all go, especially when I was going to get to that program. And I was just lucky enough to be able to have that opportunity because things were sticky. You know, as soon as I went into the college, you know, ranks like that, it's not as easy as the transfer portal as it is these days. It was a difficult process. But I chose that. You know, I didn't know exactly what was going on, but at the same deal, you know, taking responsibility for my actions and moving on. And I was able to, you know, learn a lot from those situations and grow up quick. You know, I'm coming from a small town in Rochester over to Hollywood and doing my thing over there. I was able to kind of, okay, this is, you know, you made a mistake, you got to learn from it and carry on. But no, to your point, going to Texas freshman year was huge. It's not easy for a freshman in the fall to play well. I commend any of those guys who do play well in the fall. There's a lot thrown at you. There's school, there's new surroundings, there's new teammates. It's just everything is fresh to you. So I struggled my freshman year. I was not an All-American. I struggled with my game. I didn't drive it well. I was, you know, a bit all over the place. And meanwhile, you know, Scotty was playing great. I believe he was freshman in the year, you know, at the time, but that was a year after I got there. Yep. But at the same time, my freshman year was difficult. It was challenging, and we still made it to the NCAAs. But you know, I was able to lean on Coach Fields. And at the time, you know, Jean-Paul Hébert came in a little bit later. But, you know, I was able to kind of learn from those two. And, you know, Ryan Murphy was our assistant at the time, and kind of grew up quick through that transfer process. And then being able to not play well, you know, what you expected you wanted to do as soon as you got there. So that adversity was really good for me.
Most freshmen don't come in playing amazing first team All-American golf. It doesn't happen very often. It's pretty rare. Most of the time there's an adjustment phase, and it's a different world, different life. So obviously you got through that and you had a really good career at Texas. So I want to talk about two or three different situations. One of them would be the obvious one that was very public, and that's the 2016 championship, NCAA championship at Eugene Country Club. I think you went 2-1 that week. Yeah, you won two matches.
Oaked in the finals.
Yeah, that's okay. It happens. but something in the semifinals happened, and that was Bo Hosler, your teammate. His shoulder, he threw out his shoulder and could not play the final round. And Texas, you guys had to play with four players, not five. So that was sort of the birth of the substitute in postseason. The following year, we had a sub at the national championship, and then they added it to the regional, and they've even added it to conference championships since. But describe that week from your perspective. A team runner-up was obviously devastating and disappointing, but it's an amazing accomplishment to be there in the finals of the championship.
Totally. We were coming off a ton of momentum. We won the conference championship that year. We had a bunch of wins in the regular season. When you get that sort of confidence and momentum in college golf, it's easy to ride that through regionals. And then once you get to, you know, the NCAA finals. The hardest part too is being able to sustain that and not put a ton of pressure on yourself and just go out and play golf. I mean, that's, you know, you probably deal with that all, you know, every single year. You know, that's the battle of just keeping it as simple as you can. But no, we were riding, you know, all of our games were clicking. We were playing nicely. We knew we had a chance, especially if we got into the match play. There's a lot of things that can happen, but Eugene Country Club was a beautiful setup. I mean, that's just a tight golf course. It's demanding. It's, you know, good for a lot of our games because you got to have that discipline and control. You know, you have to be able to hit the fairways when you need to. It was hard playing out of the rough that week. The greens were firm. Tight fairways, as you know. But we were able to get through, you know, quarters and semis, and then we played in the finals. But no, to your point, in the semis was, you know, that was something I've never experienced. I finished my match early. We played, I think it was USC at the time, and them in the semis, and I'm walking over, and I, you know, come over to 17, and I look, what's going on? And, you know, there is Bo getting treatment done in the fairway, just wondering what's going on. Cause in golf, you don't see that, you know, you know, maybe if someone has a bad back, they're going to get the chiropractor to work on you. But at the same time in college golf, and especially where things were going, you don't really, that doesn't come into question of a group playing through and wondering what's going on injury wise. So it was a different ordeal. And there's a lot of people out there. Cameras were rolling. So that's a little different nowadays because there weren't many college. That was probably the only college event that was televised. I was wondering what was going on, and there Bo is getting treatment down on his shoulder. And it was a phenomenal 17th hole. I mean, for him to keep pushing on, finish his match, putt it out of the bunker, make a long putt to close out the match. I mean, that's just, you can't make it up. And then that night we knew, you know, Bo was hurting, and it was likely he wasn't going to play for the finals. And, you know, at that time, the protocol was if you're not going to play and show up in your match, that's a forfeit of points. So we knew we were going to be one down, and it was going to take, at the same time, you know, three matches and you win, you do what you're supposed to do and you win the NCAAs. So that was our mentality. But yeah, different times, and certainly, you know, change the rule now, you know, and was a unique time.
Yeah, I'm glad they changed the rule. Honestly, I wouldn't want to have to forfeit a point. I wouldn't want to have to get the forfeited point. I'd rather play it, you know. So at least if you had a sub there, he could go in and play the match, which we can do nowadays. But so a less publicized, in fact, definitely not publicized event happened your freshman year. You were playing with Bobby Wyatt from Alabama at the regional in Auburn. And I was walking with Bobby. And the 16th hole, I believe it's the 16th hole, is a par five. And there was a forest in the right. And there were so many trees over there. If you got in there, it was tough to get out. And I remember you hitting your ball in there. I remember it taking you a little while to get out of there. Talk about that and something that happened that is what every coach says, never give up on a hole, never give up on a shot. Talk about that par five.
That year was really tough with the driver. You know, I'm seeing both left and right. Never good as a golfer, missing both ways. And definitely spent a lot of time in the trees that freshman year. And then regionals, you know, at Auburn University Club, there's it's generous in a way off the tee, but if you get a little haywire, it's like Stillwater Country Club. It's a lot of trees and it's a lot of trouble. Of course, I go in there thinking I can pull off any shot and I'm going to keep chipping away. Didn't, you know, really have coaches advising me at the time. So I'm going to do, you know, try to hit heroic shot, but have come a long way since then. But anyways, chopping my way out in the woods there on the right on the par five and finally make my way down there. And obviously me, you know, I just got to get into the house, you know, can't quit, and ended up holding a shot for double. And it's funny you bring that up. It's something that I kind of forget about.
Well, I remember thinking you were right at a little over 200 yards and knocked that in the hole. And you were still kind of upset with yourself because you had a double, you know, a double bogey, but at least it went in. And as it turns out, Tony Hikula, who was your teammate, was also struggling that day. And he posted a 79. And with your hole out for double, you ended up posting a 78. And you guys made it on the number the next day. To me, this is the best example of every shot matters. Don't ever give up on a shot, because honestly, that hole out probably got you guys to the national championship.
Correct. And that's all that matters, is being able to be available and play in that national championship. So that's a good point. And one through five is just so crucial in college golf.
It really is. So before we leave college golf, talk about John Fields. I've had him on this podcast. He's a colleague of mine. I still compete against him all the time. He's a great coach. He's won a couple of national championships. What's the best thing John taught you while you were there in Texas?
He, you know, taught me to be a better person and golfer. You know, he was instrumental in getting me through college. It wasn't easy. Like, you know, anyway, any college kid coming, you know, you get comfortable in your hometown, you're playing those golf courses, you are, you have your program, and now everything has shifted and I'm in, you know, different schooling, different environments. So he was able to make things very comfortable. And then his advice, you know, to be able to have that sort of, you know, advice to lean on through former players doing their thing, and his questions, and him seeking out advice from different, you know, instructors or players or things like that. He just soaks that all up, and then he's able to distribute that and kind of lead you on the path to being a better person and golfer. I mean, for him, he just made things a lot easier when I got there, and I was able to go out there and just kind of focus on my game and school and enjoy myself and play golf. He's been great to me, and still as a pro. I mean, even when I come back to Austin, he's just incredible to be able to take care of former players. And now he's just him and Ryan Murphy and then Jean-Paul Hébert. They did a really nice job. It's not easy in college golf being able to juggle all those personalities and being able to get everyone in good moods playing on the right page, because as you know, people have a lot of things to deal with. And nowadays, you know, it's a little different, I'm sure, with the cell phones, social media, and there's a lot of distractions out there. But what Coach Fields was always able to do, he was able to prepare us, get us ready. We didn't have to worry about the extra stuff, and we were able to go out there and just focus on golf.
I think that's an underrated thing about coaches, that they become mentors, counselors, sports psychologists, father figures, a lot of different things. Most people think it's all about teaching them a game or working on their golf swing. The truth is, you all come in with instructors, and we wouldn't have recruited you if you had to rebuild a whole game. We don't have time to rebuild a game. So that's not where it is. And so I've looked at John. He's got a calming influence. Seems like a really, I never played for him, but I've obviously coached against him a lot. And it's good to hear that he had that impact on you. No. So you turned pro and go ahead.
That's exactly what he did. You know, Bo Hostler, Scottie Scheffler, Doug Gim, we all came in with our own formula on how to play. And the best thing that Coach Fields did was he didn't get in the way of that. He was able to, okay, here's your schoolwork. This is our practice times. This is the facilities. This is where you guys can go compete. You know, this is the golf courses of where you want to work on your game. You know, different types of grasses, what type of preparation we're going to have. So for him to let, you know, kind of let us just get out of our own way and do what we need to do and be on our own time, our own routine. Because at the end of the day, you know, it is a team, but at the same time, an individual game. So for him to be able to let us just use our coaches and not do too much was probably the best coaching you can have.
Well, you just said it, and I believe it, and I've known it my entire career, but so many people on the outside don't think that, and they don't believe that. So it's good to hear it from somebody who was on the inside. So you turned pro in 2017. We're 6 years later, and you know, you don't actually have your PGA Tour card yet. So I'm going to say the struggle is real, and it's real for everybody that does it. I don't think there's very many Tiger Woods or Jordan Spieths or Ricky Fowlers that goes out and or Colin Morikawa or those guys. Most of the people don't do that, right?
Oh, no. And it was a big wake-up call for me. I was injured my first year as a pro. I did battle the injury bug a little bit. I do have a tendency to, go a little bit hard in the gym or, you know, I have a lot of swing speed. So, you know, it's a lot of toll on the body. I didn't know how to properly take care of my body as a pro. These are things that I had to learn. Moving down to the South Florida region is where I decided to be a pro. The beautiful thing is there's a lot of pros there. There's a lot of great advice. And there's a lot of people that have helped me out that I listen to. There's certain gym instructors, David Donatucci, who I've been with for, you know, over 5 years now. Just certain guys that I'm lucky to have in my corner and kind of soak up some information as a professional, because it is not glamorous, you know. It's a little different these days coming out as a college kid. You do have the opportunity to go to Canada. You do have the opportunity to go to PGA Tour, Korn Ferry Tour, and there's a bit more incentives or performance-based benefits, but I didn't have that. All I had was basically just Q school at the end of the fall. I wasn't like a 1-5 kid coming out of college. I did okay in college, but I was not, you know, the it player getting sponsor exemptions and going right to the tour or even having success. I struggled, you know, to put it lightly, I struggled a lot. And I had to figure out, okay, what works best for you, and just kind of figure out, you know, the best things I need to work on my game or my formula that makes me play best when I need to go tee it up.
Wow. Well said. So a lot of people would say, Coach McGraw, come on. You mentioned Doug Gim, Scotty Scheffler, Bo Hauser, Kramer, all these guys have been playing pro golf. They were your teammates. That's kind of rude. It's almost abusive to say those names to him. But I think you look at those guys as inspiration because you've played with them. You know where they were when you were in college. Don't you get inspired by those guys and their success?
I love to see him play well because it's like, okay, so can I. So that's how I spin it. I look at it. Obviously, they have their success. They've worked up the chain nicely. And they've been able to get through Q school. It's huge. I mean, the tough part about golf is that job promotion comes once a year. And if you don't make it through, you got to go fight it on the mini tour circuit. And you have to have a really good attitude. And I found that that woe is me just does not work in golf. And especially with the type of road that you decide, you know, if you want to do the Monday qualifiers countered with mini tour events. And if you have that support, the beautiful thing is too, is there's enough events you can keep your game sharp. It's just the matter of what type of attitude you want to have and staying positive. That's one of the things I take from Jordan Spieth. You know, being around him early on in college, the most positive player that I've ever been around. I mean, he was just, you know, he was able to spin and create his environment so positively, and he just always took things in stride, you know, and that's just how I want to take things as well, or continue to work on that. I struggled with that. I was pretty hard on myself. Obviously, you know, I had my adversity with injuries and such, and I wanted to play a little bit better in college, but I feel like a lot of these things have happened for a reason. Obviously a lot of these golfers didn't expect COVID to happen. But my game's in nice form. There's definitely been a lot of peaks and valleys, and that's just, you know, the way it is. But I feel like moving down to South Florida early, and I decided to be there. I had a teammate, Dominic Bazzelli, who let me live with him when I was down there. So I got a taste of that super professional life. You know, I'm going to the gym and there's, you know, Daniel Berger or Peter Uihlein. And I'm looking at how these guys go about it because, you know, there's different ways. There's, you know, do you want to work out 6 days a week and keep organized and that's how you do it? Or do you keep, you know, whatever works for you? So I was just kind of not talking much and seeing how, okay, how does Dom go about his business? Okay, how does Pete go about his business? And then, you know, other guys, you know, who are doing their thing and they're coming in and out, they're on their own schedule, they're on their own time playing their PGA Tour schedules, or there's some Korn Ferry guys as well. But I like being in that mix and having that competition of guys. And then I was fortunate enough where Dominic at the time would have me out at the Medalist Golf Club. And then, you know, there you are. That's exactly what you want to do. You want to play with the best guys, and then you want to have a game where you can keep your game sharp and then stay competitive. To me, that felt like an unbelievable life. And, you know, that's what I want in the long run. But at the same time, I was lucky enough to get a taste of it early. College is a little different. You almost make it before you make it. You know, the courses are beautiful. The facilities are incredible. I mean, there's nothing out of place. The travel, everything is done for you at the same time. But when you turn pro, unless you hire an agency that works for you, you know, everything is on you, you know, and that's, you know, a beauty or maybe a curse. You know, you just really have to grow up quickly. That travel needs to be on you. Organization is a big deal.
It really is. And, you know, you mentioned earlier, you were so hard on yourself. You know, I've coached a lot of players through the years that are, and I'm in the middle of that for a player I coach. You, I didn't coach you, but I always looked at him and thought, that's the most positive kid I've ever seen. He's a glass half full kid all the time. But there were some self-doubts and there were some times when you weren't so good to yourself.
No, not at all. And I really struggled 2017. I was injured in 2018. I mean, as a pro, it's a big wake-up call. Again, I'm going from, you know, traveling pretty easy, playing amazing golf courses, the amateur circuit, you know, a beautiful life for a golfer. And then now I'm back in the bottom of the mix trying to go earn it again. So how can I have my mentality be, you know, positive and being able to work up the chain and get the best out of myself? But no, definitely very hard on myself. Like we all are. I mean, golf is a tough sport. It's a lot of perfectionist. You know, at the same time, you just have to be grateful for where you are and the people in your corner. And I feel like I'm doing a much better job. I definitely needed to grow up and learn a little bit. But don't we all? I mean, I just feel like You know, you can never get finished with the process of golf, and you can never get finished, you know, as your development as a person. But I feel like I've come a long way. I definitely had some trying times in college. I probably wasn't the happiest person, or just, you know, even as a pro early on, but I'm definitely learning how to deal with failure better. And, it's similar. I coincided with similar to like a baseball schedule or playing in the minor leagues, working your way up. You know, they have to deal day in and day out with constant failure.
So your journey is going to be a little bit different than anybody else's, but that's the beauty of it. You how you get there, you're going to get there, but I'm going to ask that question too. Why, what quality do you possess that's going to get you to the PGA Tour? What is it? I mean, it's okay to talk about it. Why are you going to play the PGA Tour one day in the midst of all this adversity that you faced, whatever? Why are you going to get there?
Everyone has their own adversity too. So I feel like everyone has their own story, which is, it's a good thing, but I feel like my consistency has gotten extremely better over the years. I'm definitely type A person, almost military style to a fault, but that's how I play my best golf. I really have accepted it. I need to keep track of things. And that's just what works for me. And, you know, so many times I look at these guys and you hear them say, okay, this works for me. So I'm definitely learning on what works for Gavin. How can I play my best golf week in and week out? You know, in college I was consistent. I do have a tendency to do the same things over and over again. So that's where I feel like once I get out there, okay, I've played the PGA Tour Canada schedule. I know how this works. I know how the travel works. I just want to be as fresh as I can Thursday through Sunday and just focus on my game. I feel like I'm doing a better job of not getting as distracted, whether it's on the phone. I probably haven't had a lot of success for people to contact me or have that sort of appeal to talk to me. But it's been a good thing. My world's been pretty quiet, and I feel like I've been able to just focus on the process that works for me. And I definitely think my consistency, whether it's my gym work and my gym work, my golf work, I really try to treat this thing as professional as I can.
Keep doing that. That will eventually pay off for sure. So you're going to be playing Canada this summer, for sure. But you're also going to do some Mondays, if you will. Who do you travel with? Do you travel with other mini tour guys, or are you just traveling alone?
No, I have, there's a few guys. I am a bit sort of, I guess, introverted. I do have the ability to travel alone, so I take advantage of that. I do. I tried, I roomed with Bobby Hutson my first half of the Canada season, but I didn't play my best. And I was able to be in my own space for the later half of the year. And I started to play a little bit better. So I'm like, okay, you know, luckily I have the support, you know, financially to be able to do that, because that's another huge factor in golf. As you know, it's expensive, and that's just the nature of the beast. And then really the main thing is just working your way up, understanding the formula. And yeah, I have Canada that starts in June. I finished 17th on the points list last year, and looking to get over that hump for the Korn Ferry Tour Q School. I slipped up last year. And just hoping to just get my taste of what it's like on the Korn Ferry Tour.
I think you're going to be there, no doubt in my mind. But so
yeah,
you're obviously a disciplined, hardworking guy, which is important. And that's part and parcel of your personality as an athlete. What are your best diversions? What do you do that takes you away from the stress of golf when you're on the road? What's a diversion you have?
Well, the workouts are huge. I tend to treat myself, and the wellness and the nutrition, everything's getting a lot better to take care of yourself. So I look at just trying to have the best engine Thursday through Sunday. I do enjoy the workouts. I'm probably a bit more boring than most. I watch, you know, I'll do my 2 hours in the gym, and I'll do my 4 to 5 or 6 hours, whatever it is on the golf course for that day. But by the time I come home, you know, I like a nice dinner or whatnot, but I'm pretty beat. So I'm going to watch the Yankees play and just watch sports on TV. I try to keep it as simple as I can, because even I look back when I was younger, like 11 through 15, when I had that incredible, you know, positivity up and my results were very, very good, and I was doing things kind of abnormally as a junior golfer, I was just having a lot of success. My world was really simple, and that's something that I'm just trying to maintain. And I think you see the battle that with that constantly, even with guys at the top. I mean, how many interviews do you see? I'm trying to go back to this, or I'm just trying to keep things simple. I'm just trying to get out of my own way. But the line is fine. You know, guys are just doing all the right things now. They're recovering well. They're training correctly. There's not a lot of guesswork out there. And then the question is, okay, here are the answers. Are you able to take yourself to that next level? Do you have the determination, the discipline to be able to, you know, take it as far as you want?
Do you employ or use any of the enthusiasm you had as a 13, 14, 15 year old, or does it get beat down? I mean, because I know missing Mondays and finishing middle of the pack in events and whatever, missing cuts, whatever, has a tendency to beat you up. How do you go back and retrieve some of that enthusiasm as a kid?
I do, but I also watch other guys, especially at the higher level. I take a little bit from their game. You know, I look at some guys when they're going good and they're having a lot of fun out there, or just the way they're playing. Obviously, winning is fun. That's what makes golf fun, is being in contention. It's really no fun when you're playing, you know, Saturday or Sunday and you're out of the lead, or you miss the cut and you got to go on. But you got to find positivity to keep pushing on. That's why that support staff is huge. You know, so many guys now have teams. It's hard to have a team when you're on the lower level, just financially, or just, you know, a lot of it is more the challenge of yourself, you know. And that's just, I feel like every elite athlete, even Michael Jordan, he was just trying to get the best out of himself. He was kind of using ways just to get, you know, himself up to play 82 games a year, you know. And that's it's a pretty grueling schedule, especially if you're going to do the Mondays countered with mini tours and car rides and stuff like that. But I feel like my attitude is really good. I know I'm 28 years old, and I know that, you know, I want to do this and just put, you know, everything I can into it and be able to not look back.
I think when you do look back years and years from now, the struggles you've had are going to just seem amazing to you. I know that's hard. I'm serious. I tell that to young players sometimes when they're going through a really rough patch. We're going to get you through this. Once you get through this down the road, when you're experiencing incredible success, you'll look back at this and realize that's where I forged my character. That's where I became who I am. And I had to have those times. So, and trust me, Jordan Spieth, Tiger Woods, they've all struggled. It's like, we've all been there.
You know, that's just the ebbs and flows of the game. But no, you're totally right. That adversity brings out the truth in yourself. You know, you kind of have to have thick skin, and you got to look yourself in the mirror at times. You know, that's just the way it is. It's it's a sport that is constantly testing you and battling you and humbling you. How many guys do you see that you know, they work up the ladder and then they're back down and they got to go fight it, you know, again?
They do. You know, there's been countless examples of players that got to the PGA Tour, fell off the tour, grinded for a while, got it back, and became better than they were before. So anyway, I love watching your journey. You and I've kept in touch ever since you got out of college, and I'm going to continue to follow. I didn't know you beat yourself up all the time, but I didn't ever think you'd do that, but that's
That's something that even to this day, and I don't know if it comes with seeing all this perfection and things on social media. I'm trying to stay offline a little bit more because that's just not real. And I feel like the more real I can keep things, the better that I can play good golf. And that development as a person, as you know better than I do, is probably ongoing. So you're probably never going to get finished in the development and improvement as a person and a player. So I just kind of accepted that. And I'm trying to do the best I can.
As a veteran coach, I tell young coaches when they ask me, what are you trying to do? What's your secret? Whatever. My secret is I'm never finished. I'm not through learning. And part of the reason I've been doing this podcast for a little over about three years is I learned something from every guest. And I love having coaches on, current players, former players, whomever, because I feel like we learn things. And I learned something today for sure. So what's your best piece of advice for a 13-year-old who wants to play college golf and then wants to play professional golf like you are? Is there a piece of advice you'd give him, like, I know that would help any 13-year-old?
Competitive golf, playing as much as possible. You can't simulate it. You just can't. And you have to stay sharp competitively if you have the ability to compete and play. That's number one. I feel like you've just got to play regardless of what level you're at. Even where I'm at, there's a lot of times where you could just say, hey, I'm just going to play every Monday. But it's like, no, I need to make sure I'm playing 3 day or 2 days or mixing in as many tournaments as I can, because you know the game. It's just, you can't simulate tournament golf. That's number one. Other sports would be great. I enjoyed playing other sports. It was fun being around those other athletes. And then having fun, trying to keep things light. Definitely not taking it as serious. I know it is a lot of work, but at the same time, it is a game. So those probably three things.
Great advice. Great advice. Okay, final question. What are the Yankees going to do this year?
They'll be fine. Pitching looks okay. I love DJ LeMahieu. Talk about a guy who's just same approach at the plate every time. That's something that I look at from a baseball standpoint, is how do these guys deal with adversity day in and day out. Pitching, same thing. I do enjoy how they're making the movement and they're creating their own, performance, which is different than reacting off baseball and being a hitter. So I like the way those guys play, and just the pace of the game's a little similar to golf. So I do pick up on that a lot. I think they're going to be okay early on in the season. The same thing in golf. It's a long season, and you never know what's going to happen.
Okay, last question. What's the most famous professional athlete you've ever had dinner with, a non-golfer?
Dinner with?
Yeah. Have you had one?
I've played golf with Michael Jordan. I've
Oh, wow.
played three rounds of golf. I've been lucky enough to have a friend who plays with him quite a bit, and they needed a sub every now and then. And of course, when you get an opportunity like that, I don't care if it's an hour and a half away, I'm going to get in the car. And it's 36 holes, and I'm sure you've heard from other people just kind of the games of what it's like. Super fun for me. I don't talk too much on the golf course, so it's great. I don't do any trash talking. I try to let my game, what am I going to say to Michael Jordan? So I just go there, try to learn a little bit, and pretty sweet for him to treat me kindly. And we just competed and played, and those are 3 days that especially in South Florida that are pretty amazing. And then when Dominic was having me up at Medalist, it was pretty sweet to see the top players in the game, because that's where you want to take your game, and that's where you want to see how those guys work. And but yeah, definitely Michael Jordan, and then Wayne Gretzky was another one that I played with. So those two,
Okay.
pretty lucky, pretty lucky.
Nice. Nice. Did you play hockey as a kid?
I never played, I just took some lessons on the ice. My dad is a lot tougher than I am. He still plays 3 days a week in the Fireman's League. And I never got into that. I always played basketball.
Okay. Very good. Well, Gavin, I really appreciate you spending an hour with me here. This has been a blast to catch up for one, but two, to just kind of give people an idea of, there's a journey out there, and everybody's living it, and in any profession, and you're doing it. And I love your attitude. Keep it up. And hopefully, my followers, which I've got a very loyal group of followers, not that big, but definitely loyal, will be a Gavin Hall fan in professional golf.
Yeah, Coach, thanks for having me on, and very thankful for our relationship, and glad we could do this.
Absolutely. Have a good day, and play well in Canada this summer.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, perfect.
All right, see ya.
Yep.